I have a few announcements before our service begins. So first of all, our designated collection today is for the Lake Area Free Clinic. All loose coins, bills, and any check with Lake Area Free Clinic written on the memo line will go to the clinic. Black Lives Matter to Wisconsin UUs is sponsoring a workshop at Alverno College Conference Center in Milwaukee on Saturday, April 1st, from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. The workshop is called Racial Justice, The Courage to Act. Tickets can be purchased online. The link is on the LCUUC Facebook page, or you can get further info from Reverend Amy. The workshop features Chris Crass, racial justice activist and trainer, and it is designed to provide you with tools, action items, and courage to combat racism and stand on the side of love. The program is suitable for youth 12 and above. It is also highlighted in your order of service. Today is Soup on Sunday. It didn't make it into the bulletin, but if you've been in the back, you'll notice there's tables and other things set up. So please join us in the social hall after today's service. It's $5 for soup, a cookie, roll, and beverage. And you can eat here or take out. There's takeout bags as well. Today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all your electronics. You're welcome to use them during the service, just quietly. And we are about to begin, so thank you.
Come into this place where all people are welcome. Come in where all songs can be sung. Come into this place where we can exist moment by moment exactly as we are. Come into this place with joy. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your nearest neighbors.
covered.
Spirit of humanity, spirit of the divine, may this chalice be for us a reminder of how brightly we burn. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 123, Spirit of Life, 3 extra large. Actually, that means we're going to sing it through 3 times. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to engage you physically, mentally, and spiritually in improving an often imperfect world. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. Whether you were raised post-eighth generation on Wii, PlayStation, and Xbox, or grew up on Amiga, Nintendo, and Sega, or had to walk uphill a mile and spend your quarters at an arcade on Pac-Man, Q-Bert, Galaga, and Frogger. Or if you were pre-video and spent your quarters on pinball. Or were raised prior to electricity on D&D, Monopoly, Chutes and Ladders. Or were brought up into classical society by playing chess and mahjong and bridge. Or even if you had to play outside with a real ball, you are welcome here. We welcome you, whether you once owned Boardwalk and Park Place with hotels on them, or have never gotten a Yahtzee in your life. As a UUA recognized welcoming congregation, we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love or what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, stop by the welcome table and find out more about our church. We are glad that you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we try to help the community around us is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and by collecting non-perishable food items. So if you brought a food item to share, would you please bring it forward at this point or ask a child to bring it forward for you? And I'd like to ask all the children to come forward and enjoy a story. He has a bag. Watch out.
I have a heavy bag. Okay, good morning. Good morning. So today, well, first of all, I need to get my helper out. This is Samuel Clemens. Samuel Clemens is here to provide me support. So if you can come up and touch Samuel Clemens and talk to him as well. But he's there to support me and make me feel comfortable talking in front of such a large group of very scary people. Okay, today we are going to answer the question. I'm secretly writing a dictionary. Don't tell anybody. And my question for today, because I'm on the A's, is what is an avatar? Okay, so I need you guys' help to figure out what is an avatar because it changes. So we're going to try and answer it. I suspect some of you know what this is. Some of you have different ideas on it, and we're going to try and pull some of those out and see what we can learn about it. So I'm going to give you the first definition because I learned how to use the internet recently. And I went out there, and apparently Avatar's been out there a long time, way before that movie called Avatar that came out. And so English speakers borrowed the term avatar from Sanskrit. How many of you were learning Sanskrit in school? It's a very important, very old language. So somewhere in the 18th century, that's like right around when the United States was getting formed. So let's say right around the 1770s, we got the word and we borrowed it. And we borrowed it from India, from the Hindu religion in particular, where they use the word avatar to mean the earthly form of a god. So think about that, the earthly form of a god. So imagine Zeus or God, Odin, or in this case Vishnu, coming down to earth as somebody. Who would he choose to be? Well, again, using the internet, I found there's pictures out there, and there's some really cool ones. Vishnu came to earth in a lot of different forms. This is one of the ones that he came as. He came as a fish, and he came as a turtle. And the fish one was actually somewhat familiar to me, so he came as a fish to the world in order to save a specific guy from a flood that was going to destroy everybody. I said, man, that sounds familiar. So maybe you'll learn that story or another version of that story. But avatars have been around for a long time. So now we know that's the original meaning. That's a really old one from well before I was born. How do we use it today? And this is where I really need you guys to help me sort this out. So anybody have any ideas? How is avatar used today? Okay, we'll get you started here because some of you will recognize these. Do you recognize, anybody recognize what these things are? Yeah, go ahead. From Monopoly, that's right. So Monopoly, how many of you play Monopoly all the time? That's, actually I think it's the iron, I don't know. One of them, yes. This is, you are correct, this picture is wrong. So internet, wrong, mark that down on your list. Thimble, wheelbarrow, shoe, Scotty, a car, an iron, there's lots of different things. When you played Monopoly, you got to choose one of those. So if you haven't played Monopoly, I want you to know that today is World Monopoly Day. And whenever you choose your character, I want you to grab one, the one that's important to you, and say, by the power of Grayskull, I am Thimble, hear me roar. This makes no difference to the rest of the play, but it will put the other people off in terms of like, wow, I should have grabbed the thimble while I had the chance. So here's the new characters that are coming out. Yeah, there's Rubber Ducky, T-Rex, and Penguin. So those are new ones they're replacing. And I hate to tell you this, but the thimble is going away. So thimble, wheelbarrow, and shoe are going away. You can see people really love some of these characters. So those are Monopoly. We call Monopoly tokens is what we originally called them when we played the game. That represents you in the game. So when electronics got invented, people used to play something with this. Anybody recognize this character? I'm going to go there. Who? What? No. Eats marshmallows. That's not a bad definition. That's not how I knew it. Go ahead. Pac-Man. That's right. And Pac-Man has been reimagined as this character, but in fact, Pac-Man really looked like this when I was growing up. Pac-Man didn't have smooth edges. I don't think he had an eye either originally. He just had this, and he ate dots, which could be marshmallows. They could be anything. So, there's other things that are ghosts that were a little bigger than the dots. But Pac-Man. So if you played the arcade game Pac-Man, whether you did it at home, you can still go out and play it. You got to be Pac-Man, and you got to go ahead and save the world by walking through a maze and eating dots and fighting ghosts, if you were any good at it. So, okay, what's this? Pikachu. Good golly. I had no idea who this was until Pokemon Go came out. So there you go. Does Pikachu have any special powers besides looking cute? Oh, go ahead. Lightning. Pikachu has lightning. And thunderbolts. Pikachu is powerful. Fire. Wow. Pikachu sounds kind of dangerous. Are you allowed to play with Pikachu in your house? Near water? Anything like that? Okay. Pikachu is powerful, and he's cute. So now, Pikachu could be a boy or a girl. I don't really know. Who's this? Link, that's right. Where's Link from? Legend of Zelda. Link, good guy or a bad guy? Wow, invincible shield. I'm going to have to get one of those. I'm going to put that on my car. Okay. This I couldn't get a big printout of. Can you see this? Probably not. Any of you play World of Warcraft yet? Yeah. Sure. Yes. Lego Inventions has things like this, but these are six of the types of characters if you are an Alliance member in World of Warcraft, which I don't play. But if you look really closely at these, there are a lot of them are heavily bearded, heavily muscled, and all of them have something big and heavy to whack people with. So, yes, go ahead. They're bad guys. Well, interestingly, in World of Warcraft, the Alliance fights against the Horde, and you could be on either team, and since I don't know who any of them are, I don't know if any of them are good guys or bad guys. They're just out there to attack each other, as far as I know. Go ahead. Heavy hammer. Heavy hammer is a good weapon, although the invincible shield would deflect the heavy hammer, wouldn't it? The grappling hook is always good, but that's starting to get Batman. Okay, so that's one of the newer ones for people. Maybe you guys recognize this guy. Go ahead. Bowser. Where's Bowser from? Super Paper Mario. So that specific one comes from, okay? But he's in a lot of the different Mario games. So go ahead. Yeah, Mario. Mario, is he a good guy or a bad guy? Both. Interesting. So, what bad things does he do? Kidnaps princesses in particular is what I've heard. So, he breaks stuff. Who's this guy?
Mario.
Mario. Yeah. Another one. Is he more powerful than Pikachu?
No.
So he's another character. Good guy or a bad guy? Good guy. What does he do? Go ahead. Right, but what sort of things does he do in the game? What does he do in the game? He gets the princess. He's there to free the princess who's often captured by this guy, isn't he? Go ahead. What else? He kills innocent mushrooms. So do any of you go out on your lawn during the spring weather and go, oh my gosh, there's mushrooms coming up, and you stomp on them? Do you think of yourself as Mario when you do that? I don't know. So now I've got one last thing for the older ones among us. So anybody recognize what this is?
Yes.
The monkeys. The Beatles. But in fact, it's not the Beatles. It's a Beatles album. But in fact, this whole album was recorded by a super secret group within the Beatles known as Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. They pretended to be a whole nother band when they made this album because they did it for fun, I think, as much as anything else. And because they also wanted to say, we can make any kind of music we want. We're the Beatles. We don't have to sound like the Beatles. We could sound like this band we just made up. And so that is a really early version of what I would call an avatar, pre-electronics. So based on these examples, what things could we say about avatars? So I'm going to sum this up for us. So do avatars have to look like you? If you're playing a game, does it have to look like you or behave like you? No. It can have superpowers. It doesn't have to wear glasses. It could be a boy or a girl, regardless of whether you're a boy or a girl. And are they all nice? No. Some of them can be quite mean to fight other bad things or to be the bad things that other people are fighting against. So avatars on computers are just one level of pretend, and they're not really any different than the characters we become in our own imaginations before we play computer games. So it's a kind of identity protection when we have a different name on the internet. They let us be somebody other than ourselves, and this lets us experiment with something we might not normally do ourselves. It can protect us from bullying while we can express ourselves, but it can also let us become bullies. So it's something we have to be careful with when we decide who we want to pretend to be. So thanks for all coming and helping me go through some of these things. And who is our lantern bearer?
May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. And if you would follow our lantern bearer, and if the rest of you would help me sing the children out, the song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are in your order of service. What makes our church a church is not the building or the minister or the services, but all of you, the community of individuals who have decided to learn and grow together. And from time to time this year, we are hearing from individuals in the congregation and asking them to share a little bit about their journey with us during a service. So today we'll be hearing from Helen Barra.
Good morning, everyone. Excuse me, I have had a cold for the last couple days. The reason I'm a member of LCUUC is because, as she said, it's not the building, but it's the people that have been on this journey with my family for a number of years. I started looking for a church that fit our family as it was growing, and I was pregnant with our second child. And we did look around, and it was only like 30 people, I think, back about, it was 18 years ago at least. And we looked around at different churches, and then the principles fit us and fit what we were trying to do. And because we had grown up differently, my husband and I, and in a different kind of a church, very strict. And I felt, so it didn't match us. And we found a community that was meeting at churches in the area. So we've enjoyed the journey that we've been on. I'm passionate about the music here at LCUUC. We've grown. Some people have come and gone throughout our journey here. And I've been involved with the social action, the cookies at Christmas time. But most of the time, it's a lot of my passion is the music, and whether it be vocal or instrumental. So those are the things that I particularly enjoy here. Our girls have grown up with this church. One's a nurse now in Milwaukee, and one is in Washington, D.C. going to school. So you have helped me on my journey here, and I'm human. I'm not perfect, and I do enjoy this church because it welcomes that in me and my frailness, and openly helps me to encourage me to keep going.
Thank you so much, Helen. Thanks. May our stories always be a blessing to one another and to our whole community. A new minister was getting a little carried away during the offertory words. And she went on and on forever, extolling the virtues of giving and generosity and the spirit of human love. And eventually she was so overcome by the sound of her own voice that she threw up her arms in prayer and began, "Dear Spirit of life and love," and her face looked very rapturous. She said, "Oh, great Spirit of human generosity, without you, we are but dust." It was very emotional, and she would have continued. But in that moment, a tiny little girl in the front row leaned over to her mother and said quite audibly in a very shrill little voice, "Hey, Mom, what's butt dust?" So, you know, sometimes you just have to know when to shut up and pass the plate. This morning's offering will now be given and received. And please remember, our designated collection today is the Lake Area Free Clinic, so all loose stuff. And any check with Lake Area Free Clinic written on the memo line will go to the clinic. Thank you so much for these gifts and for everything you do for the life and the work of this community. As a community of human hands and human hearts, this is the time in the service where we come together to bear witness to one another's lives, Before the service, you're always welcome to come up to the candle table and silently light a candle yourself. But during the service, we speak aloud and the worship associate lights our candles for us. So if you would like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone. And can I ask you to light the first candle today for Kai McAlpin, the son of my colleague, Minister Reverend Gary McAlpin. Kai passed away this week. He was 2.
Bev here. Oh, sorry. Any kind thoughts, warm thoughts, prayers, whatever would be appreciated for my 40-year-old niece with 2 young children who just received a devastating diagnosis of cancer this past week. And we'll just be finding out tomorrow what treatments are in store for her, and everything is unknown.
Hi, this is Rick. A few days ago, this week we spent a couple days in Natchez, Mississippi. And 50 years ago, this was not a great place to be in the middle of the civil rights era. And before that, there were their problems. So today, Natchez is not a perfect place. But I love this story. It's about 57% African American. And the mayor won the vote with 92%. He had Trump voters going door to door with him. He's a gay African American.
This is Mike. Please light a candle of remembrance for Dick Franz, a founding member of the Waukesha Environmental Action League. He died at the ripe old age of 101.
Hi, this is Terry. On Tuesday, Tony and I are celebrating 19 years together. And that of marriage. We've known each other for 21 years, so anyway, it's a celebration for us each year.
My name is Eric. Please light a candle of hope. The robins are back. They don't seem to have noticed that the world is coming to an end.
Okay. And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those concerns which we hold in our hearts, but which we've not named out loud here today.
Matt Ivester is a Stanford MBA who learned the hard way that digital behavior is important. He began a website dedicated to letting people spread anonymous gossip. The site grew until he could not control it and became completely malicious, resulting in his receiving death threats and being the target of 2 attorney general's investigations. Ivester was helped to develop the following 10 tests of good digital citizenship after his experience. These are guidelines for online behavior. So the 10 tests of good digital citizenship. Number 1, the golden rule. Are you treating others the way you would want to be treated? Number 2, the golden rule 2.0. Are you treating others the way that they would want to be treated? Number three, the laws and policies test. Does what you are doing violate a law? Number four, the everybody test. What if everybody is doing the same thing that you are? Would that change your mind? Number five, the offline test. What is the real world equivalent of what you are doing? Would you be willing to do that activity in the real world or make the same comment to the person's face? Number six, the real name test. How would you change your behavior if you knew that your real name would be associated with it? Number seven, the emotion test. Are you doing something to someone because you are angry, jealous, or otherwise emotionally charged? Number eight, the whole world test. Would you be comfortable with the whole world knowing what you are doing? Number nine, the get it test. Is what you are trying to say hard to convey online? If it were misinterpreted, might it be hurtful? And number 10, the 10th test, the final test is your test. This is the test that matters most. Consider how what you are doing reflects on you as a person. What does it say about you? Do you like what it says about you? Does it reinforce the notion of the person that you want to be? Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
Internet psychologist Graham Jones says, in the real world, people subconsciously monitor the behavior of others around them and adapt their own behavior accordingly. Online, we do not have such feedback mechanisms. Common wisdom dictates that people are more aggressive, rude, and forthright online because they're anonymous and can act as unpleasantly as they like without immediate consequence. If you're irritating in real life, you risk, at best, social sanctions and, at worst, a physical assault. There's definitely evidence that points to anonymity as a factor, especially in the Internet's early years when IRC, Usenet, and message boards were the norm. But nowadays, Facebook commenting has added a personal touch, seemingly without significant curbing the aggression. Psychologist John Suller wrote a paper on this in 2004 entitled The Online Disinhibition Effect, where he explored six factors that could combine to change people's behavior online. These are dissociative anonymity, my actions can't be attributed to my person, invisibility, nobody can tell what I look like or judge my tone, asynchronicity, my actions do not occur in real time. Solipsistic introjection. I can't see these people. I have to guess at who they are and their intent. disassociative imagination. This is not the real world. These are not real people. And minimizing authority. There are no authority figures here. I can act freely. The combination of any number of these leads to people behaving in ways they wouldn't when they are away from the screen, often positively, being more open or honest, but sometimes negatively, abusing their fellow internet users in ways they wouldn't dream of offline. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit, join in singing a new song called Never Turning Back by Pat Humphreys. The words are in your order of service, and Doug is going to help us learn the music.
We have someone near a keyboard.
Someone's ready, but I can't see you.
Okay. Well, we're not doing it for a moment. Play the first line. So it's going to keep on moving forward. Repeat.
Keep on moving forward.
How about again?
Going to keep on moving forward.
Good. Going to keep on moving forward.
Gonna keep on moving forward.
Left the gonna. Keep on moving forward. There we go. Now, keep on moving forward. Okay, and the next line. Keep on moving forward again.
Keep on moving forward.
Never turning back.
Never turning back.
Fine. Never turning back.
Never turning back.
Okay, so that's the singing part. Now, Karen, if folks were wanting to clap along with this at some point, like we sing a line and then we clap, what sort of beat would you recommend? Can you demonstrate one for us? Okay, so we were saying, gonna keep on moving forward.
Keep on moving forward. Keep on moving forward. Never turning back. Never turning back.
All right, let's try it.
Keep on changing weather.
back.
We all have a face that we hide away forever, and we take them out and show ourselves when everyone is gone. Some are satin, some are steel, some are silk, and some are leather. They're the faces of a stranger, but we love to try them on. Some of you may know that. Billy Joel wrote it in 1977. That was way before the internet as we know it was even a digital twinkle in most of our eyes. But the more things change, the more some things stay the same. The internet is with us whether we want it to be or not, and whether we are personally on the net or not. Not always about you, because you may have to deal in your life with everyone else who is on the net where these behaviors are true for them and impact their interactions with you. So whether you're there or you're not there, this matters to you because it impacts your life. All of us wear masks as we move through the world. For some of us, these masks are harmless and almost completely see-through. Think about those children's masks where it's a totally clear plastic with just some eyebrows and some lips. These masks are layers of politeness and etiquette and culture. They let us pretend we're grown up. We use them to cover those moments of selfishness or emotions or feelings that our culture says are a bad idea to show. They're silk and gauze. They're the veil of maturity, adulthood. They're what keep you from screaming, woohoo, when you get the promotion and the guy next to you who's worked equally hard doesn't. They're what keep you from gagging when somebody serves you something, maybe at a dinner you're attending that you really don't like, where a three-year-old would go, ew. Your mask lets you say, oh no, I'm on a diet. They don't cover who you are, these masks, but they keep you from showing the full extent of your feelings. They hide involuntary reactions that we've learned can hurt people or aren't always helpful. But you can see us under these masks, these lightest masks. Call them politeness, if you will. Without them, social interaction would be harder, but still possible. Other masks we wear are a little thicker. You can imagine these as whole face coverings of rubber and plastic, like the expensive masks you see online with the dinosaur head. And we use them when parts of our personality or our beliefs can't be shown in a context. And it may be completely harmless. So think of every time you've gone to an expensive restaurant and the waitress says, I am Jill, and I'll be your waitress today. How can I help you? And she's got a big smile. And she's been on her feet for 9.5 hours, and her back hurts. She doesn't like you that much. I'm giving you a hint. She really wants a good tip. Or what about when you're on TV and you're watching what is WWF, and the masked wrestler gets up there and he rips the mask off and he's snarling and his face is contorted. Hatred. He doesn't really hate anybody. He's looking for a paycheck. Mask. A character. These kind of masks don't control the extent of an emotion shown. They cover it completely. They can create the impression that we think or we feel something we do not. Perfectly appropriate in all kinds of contexts, and all of us have worn them at times. For those of you who worked as therapists or doctors or nurses, there have been times where you heard something that made you inwardly go, oh dear God, I think I'm going to be ill. teachers have heard the same thing. The first time a first grader picks up a frog on the playground and stuffs it in their mouth to impress the girls. You don't tell them, oh my God! The mask comes down and you say, that wasn't very appropriate, Billy. Spit out the frog. I was a nurse for 22 years. There were enough times when I worked ER that I kept a very straight face and said, oh no, we see this all the time. No, we don't. You're the only one that's ever done this. But the mask preserves the dignity. It's a kindness at times. Other times it preserves my dignity or your dignity. Not all pieces of who you are appropriate in every context. Not all emotional reactions are helpful, and not all interests need to be visible everywhere you go. But you can still wear these masks and be your real self. The trick is you take them off, put them on, take them off, put them on, and you don't wear them for the bulk of your life. These can keep us from being hurt unnecessarily and help us avoid violent confrontation at times. But they can also mislead and confuse. How many of you know someone, or were someone, who mistook a bartender's friendliness for flirting? How many of you ever have had a friend who was furious because that waitress was flirting with my partner all night? How many of you ever said, wow, that doctor is incredibly cold. He doesn't care about me at all. Like he had a mask on. Wearing a mask requires a little skill to do well. The third type of masks are the masks that hide reality completely. These are rock walls, steel sheets that you're hiding behind. They're layers of impenetrable substance. People use them to mislead and misdirect and misinform. This is the face worn by the woman who claims she adores sports as she dates the wealthy sports fan until they get married. And she says, actually, you know, I really want you to sell those season tickets. This is the face of the good Christian who wears clan robes on Sunday after church. This is the face of the male feminist who is all about that life until he sleeps with you and then you never see him again. This is the face of the serial killer who pretends to be the harmless tourist. In the world of flesh and blood interaction, we have a huge number of tools at our disposal that let us see through these masks. Body language and tone give people away. If we know someone in person, we can look beyond the immediate interaction and look at their life. Does it match? In general, unless someone is making a concentrated effort continuously to be someone they're not, a con person, we get some understanding of what the face looks like. Who's the real person? And when we're wearing the mask, we know that. We know that. We know you can see us underneath, or at least you'll be able to if we keep it up. In general, we use our masks in good ways, to present our best face to the world, or to do a specific task at work with the right tone. But we know that the people around us are real, and you're going to interact or not interact based on who you're being shown that we are. And they'll figure out eventually if they don't match. So in the physical world, you have choices about what you show, but they are limited by reality. Now, I can come out here and I can say to you, behold, I am 6 foot tall, blonde, and I wear a size 3. You know, it's not going to fly for very long unless I am speaking to an audience of the visually impaired. Reality becomes self-evident. I am very obviously not blonde. You can tell people that you believe in love and equity and justice, but if they see you breaking into the office safe with a crowbar, they get the idea you may be fibbing a little. Nobody in your real life knows your theology or what you really believe. They know what you have said to them, and they know you by what you do. The theological complexities you deal with in the real world are direct. What do I personally believe? What do I believe in here? How am I called to live those beliefs? And how much should other people be able to see of my beliefs in my daily life? So how do I live it? How do I let you see it so that you don't need to read the books I've read? You just need to see my life to be able to infer who I am, what I believe. But in the digital world, in the world of the avatars that Paul was talking about, it works a little differently. And what happens in cyberspace impacts us all because 87% of Americans are online. 87%. The 13% who are not are split between those who claim absolutely no interest. Mind you, this includes the Amish. Those who are not able to understand how it works, literally, who say, I just can't comprehend. This includes profoundly handicapped folks, the elderly, folks in nursing homes, and those who live in deep poverty, the homeless, those way at the bottom of the poverty scale who simply have no access whatsoever. So even if you're not online, there is a good chance that everybody around you is. Let me have a show of hands. Who in this room absolutely does not use the internet? Period. Okay? That's about the right statistic. That's about what you expect. So he's got to deal with all of us, whether he chooses to use it or not. Our personalities are impacted in our interactive strategies. So he may not be there, but he gets it secondhand. For the rest of you, you're right out there in the fray. Online, we're removed from physical cues like expressions and body language. All you've got is the avatar, the picture, the image chosen or picked by the person, the mask. It's difficult to tell if somebody's telling the truth or being sarcastic. Most of us have taken to using an asterisk or some other thing and labeling things sarcasm so we don't hurt feelings. You may be on a different continent from the person you're talking to. You may be coming from different cultures. You may have no idea of who they are other than the mask they are handing you. And you have no way to see behind it. Online, you can create a mask that looks any way you like, and with a little care, you can maintain it forever. And more than that, you can engage in activities that you wouldn't in real life. And wear no masks at all, not even those of maturity or civility or civilization. If you live here in Heartland, Wisconsin, or in the environment nearby, there's no way to say this, but we're not exactly a New York City tenderloin level of sophistication and wit if you want a wilder edge to your life. We're Midwestern calm. But online, you have immediate access to everything the world has to offer. From the wildest cities in Thailand, to the clubs in New York, the minds that create them in the physical space have created digital spaces that echo them. Online, you could escalate an argument using words that would get you clobbered in real life. You can comment on a news article with fury. You can be a smart aleck. You can be hurtful. And on the flip side, you can create absolute perfection. Your life can be the greatest hits camera roll. You can show only moments of absolute wonder. Your life is a Pinterest craft success highlights roll. Make everybody else feel like absolute hell. Because you never fail, or at least you never let them see you fail. This adds a layer of theological complexity to life. Now you have to decide what you believe, how to live it, how much to show people about what you believe, and the big one, how do you believe your beliefs and values should be demonstrated in cyberspace? When you're online, how do you live your beliefs? How called are you to keep it close to your real life? Let me give you some slightly scary stats. According to a CNN report this year, teens now spend 9 hours a day on social media. That's in addition to school and sleep. 9 hours a day. The average adult spends 2 hours a day. So you think about that in terms of your own free time. How much of a chunk that is. For adults, according to writer Evan Asano, current total time spent on social media beats time spent eating, drinking, socializing, and grooming. So again, even if it's not you, it's the person next to you or the person you work with. In the real world, your behavior is controlled by your theological and moral and ethical constructs, and it is held in check by a combination of laws and rules and other people's reactions. Online, you can choose to be completely yourself and take all the masks away. You can engage only in behaviors and ways of speaking and being that you would do in physical space, or, wow, you can not do that. The anonymity of much of the internet makes it possible to create a cyber persona, a mask, and to carry out behaviors that you would never do in real life. The way you talk to people, the way you explore things, it's not real after all, right? But the effects of your behavior are very real. Dr. Douglas Gentile, who is a national expert on internet and game behavior, you may have noticed every kid sitting here knew at least some of the characters. Everyone seemed like they'd had some exposure. Dr. Gentile was interviewing a young man named Brett about the two worlds he inhibited, online and real space. And he asked which world Brett found more important. And Brett said this, "I decided that the progression of my game character was more meaningful than the progression of myself in real life. It's so much more quantifiable. It's so visible. It's more entertaining than real life. It's easier than real life." Each year, more and more of us spend more time online, and people under 35 were born into a world where computers have always been there. And the boundaries between real and online are slowly being edged away. Whether you game or hang out on Facebook or Tumblr or just surf, the questions remain the same. Which world are you spending your time in, actually or just mentally? Are you thinking about what you're going to say? Are you thinking about the comment you're going to make on that article you read this morning before work? And how are you living your values in that world? And if your behavior and speech online doesn't match what you do in physical space, here's the big question. Which one is the mask? And why are you feeling the need to wear it? What face do you choose online? Is it a stranger to the values and theology that you claim to believe? Our first reading today gave you 10 tests for good digital citizenship. Does your online presence measure up? Which world's behaviors reflect who you really are? We all have a face that we hide away forever, and we take them out and show ourselves when everyone is gone. Some are satin, some are steel, some are silk. Some are leather. They're the faces of a stranger, but we'd love to try them on.
What face are you wearing?
Amen. We have just a moment for a polylogue. If anyone has comments or thoughts they would like to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone.
It was a very good sermon and a very, very timely topic. And what I would add in terms of my own personal experience, having been on an internet forum and a discussion, and what is also an effect is the effect on yourself when you engage with somebody negatively that you really disagree with, you will find yourself filling with tension and anger, and it's destructive to yourself when you're pulled into a situation like that anonymously and feeling the effects of what they're saying and what you're saying, and it's very negative on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. And then they go out in the real world and are angry at the guy who's walking down the street who's never been on the internet at all.
Hi, my name's Martha. I have kind of a positive and a negative in a way. My daughter has great anxiety, and part of her social life is the internet, and she's gotten quite a few friends who have helped her and supported her through hard times and issues. And I don't, I struggle with the balance between the 2D world and the 3D world. I don't want to take it away from her because that is her support system.
Yeah.
And she's got some pretty neat friends through forums and other things. So, it's not all bad.
Yeah, that's the marvelous upside of it. When people are and do bring their most authentic selves, you see it in some wonderful connections.
Hi, I'm Christy. I've had the same experience as a breast cancer survivor. The world of online support went far beyond the support that I could have received personally. The other comment that I wanted to make, you talked about masks, and it's a very real part of our everyday life, but sometimes they're conscious and other times they're very subconscious.
Yeah.
And understanding who we really are in different contexts can be a very difficult thing, and you're not always necessarily meaning to mislead anybody, but you're teasing through what is a mask and what isn't a mask yourself every day, or at least that's my experience with life.
Hi, I'm Barb. I am so naive. I've never considered the internet or any exchange that I make while using it other than partly because you write in what you communicate. It's like, this has to measure up. I guess I'm putting on a mask, really. Yeah. This has to measure up who I think I want people to perceive me as.
Yeah.
So...
It's a wild balancing act.
Hi, my name is Erin, and I've recently had some serious faux pas on social media because I don't know a lot about it, and I did not know that if I post something to somebody's Facebook page, all their friends would see it. And even though I didn't put anything wild or strange or unusual or just like, hey, there's an art show going on in Milwaukee, suddenly this person's family wanted to know who they were dating because I was out there and it was like, who's this person all over your Facebook page? And so once I figured that out, I stopped doing that. But what it did is it made me not even ever want to comment again or like anything that this person was doing. It took my behavior 100 ways back. The other thing that I discovered as recently as yesterday is that I have a friend that I have met through storytelling, and we do a lot of things, like go to museums, go to shows, and stuff like that. And then there's a lot of texting that goes back and forth afterwards. And I thought, now that's interesting. I'll say that in a text, but I won't say it to the person.
Yeah.
So even though we're not Catholic and we don't have to confess here, I'm going to confess. I said something really rude to this person 2 weeks ago, and I was... And I'm not like talking like really, really rude, but it was something I would not have said in person to this person. And it wasn't something I even really felt, but I was angry and I lashed out. So I did something really old-fashioned. I picked up a phone and I called them and I said, I was really rude to you in text and I want to apologize and have you hear my voice so you can actually hear what's going on with me and know that I really am sorry and I'm not just sending you... emoji saying, okay, let's all be better now. But anyway, so thank you for listening to my confession. I appreciate it.
And I think that's all we got time for, Dan, unless anybody has one more short thing.
I just wanted to remind you that Eleanor Rigby wore the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. What is it for?
Terry, one more.
When you were talking about people who aren't on the internet, let us not forget all the people who are in prison.
Yeah.
And I just heard about a man the other day who got out of prison after 25 years. He was exonerated through one of those programs, and he had never seen the internet in his life.
Yeah, the culture shock is darn near terminal with some of those folks. I think that's all we've got time for today. We're running a little long. So thank you all very much.
We extinguish this flame, a mere wisp of matter in process, almost as insubstantial as the thought of it. Yet our civilization has harnessed the power of such a flame to drive and shape a new world. So may it be with our lives that in truth and love they may drive and shape a new world. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 143, Not in Vain.
And know that whichever world you inhabit, you are in the mind and the community of the divine. Peace, and may it be so.